Well, hey, everyone. I am back in the house with Randy Alcorn. For those of you who did not catch my interview with him about his book, Heaven, make sure that you find that and listen to it because it was great. And we are now going to talk about something that I'm sure will blaze most of you away because we're going to talk about money and possessions. So drop whatever you just purchased, whether it's that $5 latte or, I don't know, your new iPad or whatever, because you're not going to want it in your hand when we're done talking to you.
Or you take the next 2 minutes, buy whatever you want, but then that's it.
No, so. Then they're going to have to give it. Then they're going to have to cash it in and give the
that's
money.
Right.
So I want to talk to you about this. Because Randy, it's fabulous. There are a bunch of people, of course, that have chimed in on this and said that it was life-changing for them based on your book. It's a small book called The Treasure Principle, Unlocking the Secret of Joyful Giving. Now, if you're just sitting there and you feel like you're just snoozing because you're like, I have heard messages on giving and I know about tithing and I don't even have a good job because I'm just 22 and I can't do this. This is for people that are in their 40s and 50s. Well, you know what? It's not. So pay attention because we're going to be talking to you. And Randy, I want to start by saying you kind of kick off this book with an illustration of this guy who goes into a field and digs up a treasure chest and realizes that in order to get that treasure, trying to be legit and not just stealing the treasure, he's going to have to buy the farm and the land that it's on. But the trade-off for what he's going to get is so much more. And you apply that to really us looking ahead to eternal treasures. And I know one thing that you describe kind of in saying this is that treasure captures our imagination. And obviously, we see that as we accumulate wealth on earth here. But can you just talk to us a little bit about why imagination, as far as eternal treasure, is so important for us to have?
Well, I think we can't look forward to and anticipate something that we're incapable of imagining. Mm-hmm. And so when we see in Scripture the emphasis on the resurrected life, on the new earth, and that we will enjoy God's creation and that God is promising to reward us for a life of faithful service to Him. And we might say, well, wait, that sounds mercenary. You should never be motivated by reward. Actually, we're wired to be motivated by reward. And of course, we should not think that heaven will be a reward for a life well lived as if we could do good things that could earn our way to heaven. Christ has earned our way to heaven. There's only one way to get into heaven. That's by trusting in His merit, His righteousness, and not in ours. But God nonetheless says to His children, now here's what I want for you. I want to reward you. And I'm going to look at your giving. And I'm going to look at the way you use your time. And I'm going to one day at the end of your life, I'm going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant, hopefully, if it has indeed been well done. Enter into your master's joy, and I'm going to give you the rewards that I think are fitting to the labor that you have done to serve me. And that is just exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we need to break it down as to what this actually looks like then, because there we all know the scripture about storing up for yourself treasures in heaven. And you actually talk in the book, you actually say you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Most of us don't even know practically what that means. And folks, if you think you don't know what that means, okay, first of all, we're going to talk about this right here with Randy, but then I'm going to have him tell what this means to him personally, and it's going to totally psych you out. But go ahead. Okay, let's let's start with what in the world does that mean practically, sending something on ahead?
Well, in Matthew 6, Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. And the reason he gives for not doing it is because they're going to get eaten up. They're going to be destroyed. Then he says, but do store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And he says, because they're not going to be destroyed there. And then he says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So Jesus makes an interesting argument. He doesn't say, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth because that's the wrong thing to do. He says, don't do it because it's the stupid thing to do. It isn't going to pay off. Jesus has an investment mentality. He's saying, if you're going to devote your life to something, why wouldn't you want to devote your life to something which will last? That is, which will outlast this brief time we live down here on earth, the earth that's under the curse. and will last into eternity in the resurrection and the life that we will live forever in the new heavens and on the new earth. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you're going to take something and it doesn't have value except for a brief period of time, during that brief period of time, if you have the opportunity to put it somewhere where it is going to outlast this world, why wouldn't you do this? So you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And that's literally what Jesus is saying.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of eternal rewards, and I know you talk a lot about, you know, us investing in people's lives right now, and it's a very it's really a radical concept in the sense of, are we willing to give this up and loosen our grip on the stuff that we have? And, you know, a lot of people will argue, well, you know, my HDTV, it's sure working well for me now, even though I can't take it with me, but I'm enjoying it now. But this idea, can you just explain to us a little bit about, okay, eternal rewards, and then the whole idea of like crowns, because when people talk about that, no one knows what they're talking about either, and just really what that means, like when the rubber hits the road.
Well, we don't know all that's involved in the rewards that God promises for his children. But we do know that in some places he says, if you've been faithful with a little, I will put you over much. And he talks about being put over 5 cities and 10 cities. In the kingdom. Well, that would be a position of authority. That would be reward as a position of authority. Now, the problem with that is that a lot of us go, well, I don't, are you kidding me? Authority, being in charge, having responsibility, that takes work. I don't want to do that. Well, no. First of all, we should want what God wants. Secondly, we should understand that he's talking about doing these things in a world where we will have the gifting and the orientation, and we won't have the fears, and we won't be dealing with the sin and the suffering of this life, and it will be a privilege to serve Christ and to have people serving under us and us serving under other people. To us, and then we go, oh, wait a minute. I thought that heaven should be, everything should be equal for everyone. It should all be this perfect democracy or maybe communism or something where everybody's at the same level. But haven't you ever worked for somebody or even met somebody that you would love to work for and to work under, a humble person, a Christ-centered person, where it's just a privilege to do that? And I think that's how we should look at these passages. And I also, just to address this idea that I know goes through people's minds, the mercenary problem, because I have people say this to me all the time, rewards. Oh, we shouldn't want rewards. We should just want to be with Jesus. Well, first of all, it's the Bible that tells us that we should want rewards, and the Apostle Paul, the words of Jesus. But an analogy that I use is back when my daughters, who are now 33 and 31, and I have 5 grandsons now, but these 2 daughters, wonderful girls that I raised, suppose when they were back in high school, that I had said to them, okay, girls, this Saturday, we're going to have a family work day, to which I know they would have said, oh boy, that sounds like fun. But we're going to have a family work day. And at the end of that day, I'm going to pay you both, fill in the blank, $60 or whatever. And then I'm going to take you out to a nice dinner at the restaurant of your choice. Now, if I tell them this, do I want them to look forward to being paid the $60 or going to the restaurant of their choice? Of course I want them to look forward to it. But suppose instead I said to the girls, okay, we're going to have a work day on Saturday. And then my girls get together and they say, well, Dad, we've talked it over. And we've decided that unless you're willing to pay us $60 and take us out to a nice dinner, we're not going to do that work day thing. All right, how would I feel if they said that? Well, what's the difference between those 2 things? There's a huge difference. If reward was our idea, it'd be a bad idea. We don't even deserve to go to heaven. What are we doing talking about wanting to be rewarded? But the whole point is, it's not our idea, it's God's idea, and God takes pleasure in the idea of rewarding us, his children. So let's not deny God of that pleasure. Let's celebrate the fact that it's his idea, and he'll take delight in our wanting what he's offered in terms of reward, just as I would take delight in my daughter's wanting what their dad has offered them.
Yeah. And you talk specifically about really extravagant giving and how that in turn becomes blessing. I mean, how really there is a correlation between the two. And I know you use the example of Letourneau and the millions that he made, and it was like he kept shoveling it out and giving it to people, and God kept giving it back to him. I want to talk about another example of this, and this is how you have implemented this, because I think people are sitting here going, well, you know, Randy, he's like a big time author, and you know, he's probably sitting in some palatial place and just, you know, hanging out with his book royalties and whatever. But you've really
actually, I sleep in the lobby of Focus on the Family. Okay, so let's just get that out in the open.
But we did give you a free blanket, you know.
That's so true, that, and I got a mug. I got a mug that is something.
So you're set. So talk to us a little bit about what this looks like in your life.
Well, by God's grace, over the years, books that I've written have sold very well. There's over 7 million copies that are out there. A lot of money comes in terms of those royalties. But we made the decision years ago through certain circumstances that developed in our lives that we wanted to give 100% of the royalties away to God's kingdom. That's what we've done ever since. And so the poor, the hungry, the needy, we give money to stop the sex trafficking. We do it to help the disabled and those in prison. And there isn't a good cause that exists hardly out there that we haven't had the privilege of getting involved in. And I'm telling you, it has been nothing but joy. So nobody should feel sorry for us. We live what some would call a lower middle class lifestyle. Others would just call it a middle class lifestyle. It's certainly not poverty level. But we decided years ago, you know what? Anything above a certain amount, which is sufficient to take care of us, and it includes, you know, having a bike and a tennis racket, and I got a car, my wife's got a car, these kinds of things. Anything above that, let's take it and give it to God's kingdom, because there are other people who need it far more, and this way it's going to outlast this life. And you know what I found? I know a lot of very wealthy people, including wealthy believers, and I found that there is not one of them who are happy because they are wealthy. Some of them are happy, but actually it was easier to be happy back before they had so much to worry about and so much to fret over and take care of all the time.
Mm-hmm. You're also pretty hardcore, and I think this is important to note given the age and situation of our audience, that you're not a big fan of parents leaving big amounts of money to their kids either. So sorry, Elkhorn daughters, apparently you're not going to get any of these royalties either, but you know, that's important to you.
And you know what's great is that I've talked with my daughters and sons-in-law about this, and they're totally on the same page with us, because I say, you know what, God is providing for you in your family. And sure, we'll leave something to help our grandkids, college education, something like that. But we're not going to say, okay, these book royalties that have been going to God's kingdom, well, now they must go to our kids. You know, my sons-in-law are responsible guys who need to work for a living and provide for their families. And if they were getting millions and millions of dollars of book royalties, would that actually help them to provide for their family and support their family and be the leaders in their family? It actually wouldn't. It would actually end up being a hindrance.
Yeah. So let's talk right now to young adults who may be starting out. You know, we've got people that are working retail. We have people that are just, you know, accountant level one in corporations, you know, whatever. How can a young adult start giving where they are and start giving extravagantly, really, with this principle in mind, knowing that either they make very little or they may be in debt from their school loans or whatever, and they say, I want to do something, I want to do something big, but here's where I am right now?
I think you start with where you are and you stretch yourself and you learn by doing. So you think, okay, how much could I give to this special offering for missions that's coming up on my church this Sunday? How much should I give week to week to my local church and to support worthy parachurch organizations and missions groups all over the world? Well, start with where you are and then stretch yourself and say, okay, I think I could afford to give this much. And then depending on what you come up with, You might want to increase that. You might want to double that. But whatever it is, just say, okay, I will do this, and maybe I'll have to actually give up a venti latte now and then. Maybe I'll actually have to not drive a car that's quite as beautiful as the one that I now drive. Maybe I should sell that one and get another one. Or if I was didn't have a car and I was going to buy one, or maybe if I had two cars, or we had two cars and our family, or maybe I can get by with this, or I can take the bus to work. But whatever it is, make what is probably a fairly small sacrifice, and then just ask God to give you the joy that comes with trusting Him and with giving to those who need it more. Jesus said in Acts 20:35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. The word translated blessed is not some empty spiritual word that doesn't have a meaning. It actually has a meaning directly related to happiness. To be blessed is to be made happy. And there is a happy-making dimension to giving. That's what Jesus is saying. It's more blessed, it's more happy-making to give than to receive. And if you think about the times in your life where you have been really, really happy, many, many of those will not simply be the times where you have received something, but where you have given something. And when you help the homeless, and when you do the soup kitchen thing, and when you go down on the streets and you help people out and you volunteer your time and you go mow the lawn and care for the place of the widow in your church who can hardly get up out of her bed anymore, and you do those things, at the end of the day, do you feel like, okay, I checked off the box of sacrifice, I was a dutiful Christian? No, you just feel good. You feel good and right and warm inside and happy that you gave. And when you learn to stretch yourself and give more and more, you will find God will infuse you with more and more happiness.
Well, I think that's so related to what you say about where you start putting your money, your heart is going to follow that. And I think, you know, you kind of call people out in the book by saying, you know, don't say you have a heart for missions. Don't say you have a heart for women's ministry or a heart for the unborn or whatever. Start putting your money there. And then you'll see, first of all, you'll see where your heart really is right now, but also your heart will follow when you start giving, because it really is an indicator. I mean, I think that's so... it's so huge. I mean, I could just see people right now starting to, you also talk about people just starting to be owned by their stuff and how exhausting it is to just maintain all this stuff. I feel like that now. I own a home and I'm just like, can I get rid of this landscaping? Can I get rid of this? I'm always maintaining something and it just drives me bonkers to keep up with it all. And just makes me want to go home and like set some goal for myself of getting rid of 200 things. I'm going to do it.
When Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's so powerful, because what he's saying is, okay, let's say you buy this nice, new, beautiful car. And you think, okay, this is going to bring me great joy and happiness. Okay, so now you get the car and you got the payments that you got to do and you got to take care of this car. And now what happens when you pull into a parking lot? Well, let's see. I can't park here because that door is too close. When they get in there, they're going to nick my car. And then you may become one of those obnoxious people that park over the center of a line, you know, where everybody else wants to come by with their key and just, I've never actually done this. And just mess up my paint job because I'm being selfish or whatever. But I actually was having breakfast with a guy one morning. I think I mentioned this in the Treasure Principle. And we were having a Bible study and he kept looking out the window. And I kept thinking, what are you doing? And so finally I just say, is there something going on out there in the parking lot? Because I can't see what you're doing. And he says, well, he says, you know, I got a new car. He says, I like to keep my eye on it. Now here's a guy who wanted to have breakfast and study the word. And he literally is being kept away from the things of God because he's got a car so nice that he's worried about the thing. Now, my car was also somewhere out in that parking lot. Trust me, if it got dinged, I would not notice. It's been dinged so many times, you know, and so and don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about the virtue or the righteousness of having an old dinged up car. I'm talking about the worry-free dimension of it. I am not in bondage. My friend is in bondage because he has this nice new thing that becomes somewhat of an idol in his life, a God substitute, so to speak. Whereas my car is not going to keep me awake at night. And then that's, in a different sense, for some people, it maybe would keep them awake at night to have a car that looks like mine. But for me, it's exactly the opposite. It frees me. It liberates me.
Yeah. Well, and I just see that. I mean, all of y'all out there had better just be like going over the edge with this, because this is so true for us where, you know, I have friends that research for months computer systems or entertainment systems, or they're going to trick out their basement and make it into this like super man cave or something. And I'm just like, oh my word, you have just spent a year of your life doing all this research and then trying to find the best deal and whatever. And, you know, I think just the time spent and the effort spent, and it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
Now take that same amount of time and effort and invest in okay, where are the best? Okay, I'm going to give more money now, and I want to support missions. I want to do church planning and some. All right, I'm going to go online now and find out these different organizations. I'm going to read books, and I'm going to talk to a missions pastor. I'm going to talk to some missionaries I know. Okay, now you're doing research about where to give. And that research, one, will revitalize you. You'll find out what God's doing in every part of the world. It'll give you a special motivation to give more as you get to know these people and hear the reports from what's happening where they are. And so there is a time of your life that's not wasted. It's invested, and you will carry it with you the rest of your life here on earth. And one day in heaven, you're going to be sitting down at these great banquets where they'll come from the east and the west, and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and you'll sit at these banquets, and then he'll be a person of a different skin color with a different language. And now the two of you are able to communicate, and they're going to say, hey, thanks for giving and sending money and supporting us, our church and the church planning, and after the great earthquake, and you helped my children to be able to live and have food and clothes, and we worshiped God and we came to faith in Jesus because you gave. Now, do you think in that day, any of us will look back and say, wish I would have spent it all in a new car and a stereo system? Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm. No. Okay, Boundless friends, this means that right now you're going to hop on the blog and you're going to write there, you're going to comment, and you're going to say, one, how you're going to start unloading some of your stuff. You know what the stuff is. You know what you need to get rid of because it's just sucking the life out of you and you're maintaining it. You're spending money, whatever you're probably thinking of the next thing you're going to buy right now. So you're going to tell us what that is and make it public. And then two, you're going to tell us about how you're going to start giving more extravagantly. Once you've unloosed yourself from all this stuff and you have more money and you don't have to maintain it, you don't have to care for it, you don't have to worry about it, you can go sit and study the Bible with people and not worry about where your stuff is. Tell us how you're going to start doing that. We're going to start it right here at Boundless today. So do it. If Randy Alcorn can do it, we can do it. We don't even have as much stuff as he potentially could have, whatever. So we're going to do it. The book is The Treasure Principle. If you need more motivation, just grab this book. It is very short. It is very small, and get started on that. Get motivated, because it totally motivated me. My goodness, it motivated John Piper, and that guy gives all kinds of stuff away too. So if he had to learn something from it, then you do too. The Treasure Principle, again, find out more about Randy at EPM.org. EPM, that is, again, Eternal Perspectives Ministries, which he founded and directs there. And you can, of course, stay on top of all his latest writings there as well, and what he's doing speaking around the country and stuff when he's not popping in here at Focus on the Family. So Randy, thanks so much for being part of this discussion.
You're so welcome. Great to be with you, Lisa.